can't stay.
But baby, thank you for tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me Cece, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise.
Caffeinated, Denise. What you know about that? What you know about that? Hey!
Okay, pray for all of us.
I got my espresso.
Oh, boy. So, Denise, it's been such a great week in pop news, especially for Black folk. We had a lot of nominations released this week. We had the Golden Globes, the SAG Awards, and the NAACP Image Award nominations. Let's start with the Golden Globes.
Ooh.
Who was the biggest excited, maybe not an upset, but definitely a surprise for me? Issa Rae is nominated for Best Performance by an Actress in, is it a television series, musical, or a comedy? I think so.
Broad range of things.
Yeah,
it was like a commercial or a horror movie.
Golden Globes is interesting in that way. Yeah, it's Best Performance by an Actress in a Television Series, Musical, or Comedy. So she's nominated, as well as Tracee Ellis Ross from Black-ish. And as you know, I love Black-ish. Anthony Anderson is also nominated for Best Performance by an Actor in a Television Series, Musical, or Comedy. But it was so cute. Issa Rae and Yvonne Norji, who plays Molly. They I think Molly actually posted it on Instagram that she FaceTimed Issa. It was Issa's first FaceTime. Because, you know, Issa actually did a commercial a while back for Samsung. So she has now switched, apparently, to the iPhone.
And
they were doing their first FaceTime ever together. And they were both in, like, do-rags. It was...
Stop.
I'm not. Yvonne said, she wrote that it was, like, you know, butt crack of dawn. And
okay, I'll never be famous enough for a do-rag publicized conversation.
She like took these that's pictures it. Calling and said to tell her the news. Black
Aww,
women.
That's sweet. So they're like besties in real life?
I don't know if they're besties in real life, because I don't have you ever seen her in anything that Issa's done?
I feel like she had a one-off appearance on the web series.
Okay.
But I'm not sure. Like, she just kind of floated in and floated out, like, as one of those odd employees at the job. But, yeah, she looked familiar.
Well, they seem to be very close now. Who else is nominated? Courtney B. Vance is nominated for People versus O.J. Simpson. People versus O.J. Simpson got a lot of nominations, as did Moonlight. Moonlight is, everyone is expecting it to go up for a lot of awards when the Oscar noms come up. But for now, they're doing very well. In everything else, they've got a nomination for Best Motion Picture. They've got a nomination for Best Performance by an Actor.
Wow.
And, you know, they've got a nomination for Best Original Score. But I really, really hope to see Mahershala Ali, who has the nomination for Best Performance by an Actor in a Supporting Role. I hope to see him take it home. Now, he's the bad guy in Luke Cage.
Yes, yes. I love it. I love it. He was just like, so it's 2016 and I'm going to do all of the characters.
Well, you know, I first met him on House of Cards, where he's been for a minute. But this year, I think most people have been introduced to him. And I think his role in Moonlight is the one that shows how diverse he is.
Right. So, wow, he's going to be a household name. He's amazing. But to me, the wild card there was the O.J. Simpson. You know, this kind of comes, it kind of was a wild card.
Well, let's talk about Cuba.
Yeah, I thought it was Cuba's last stand, you know? Like, you know, and Cuba don't turn down roles. He like the Black Nick Cage. He, Cuba was radio, Cuba everybody. He was a Tuskegee Airman. I mean, like, he, Cuba everywhere.
Indeed.
You need Cuba to be. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's so I wasn't, but you know, Cuba can also act. We forget.
He can act. And he's been wasn't he nominated for, oh, maybe that's saying too much. I can't remember. But I felt like he was nominated for Jerry Maguire.
Jerry Maguire.
Wasn't he nominated for that? He should have been nominated for them tears and Boys in the Hood. That's what he should have been nominated for. I don't think he was nominated for that though.
He's been in it for a while. He made some decisions. I'm not going to get into it.
Yeah, so, you know, Also, with the Screen Actors Guild Awards, Moonlight has seen a lot of nominations, as has Hidden Figures, which we haven't talked about at all. So Hidden Figures is nominated for the Golden Globes, for the SAG Awards, and for the NAACP Award, Image Awards. Who else is nominated? Viola Davis. She's nominated for her role in Fences for a Golden Globe. And she's
also crying in the trailer. She ugly crying in the trailer.
She's nominated for the SAG Awards as well. I don't know how I feel about Fences, but we'll see.
Right. How you don't know how you feel?
Well, because I haven't seen it yet. So for me, I think that movie will depend on how it ends, if I approve. I think it's amazing. Didn't Denzel also direct it? So he's not only the lead actor in it. I think he directed it, didn't he?
I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a August Wilson screen adaptation. So I'm sure it's going to be all the things that his plays typically are. I've never seen an August Wilson play that ended happily. So we'll see how they ended it. That will decide it for me. But yeah, Denzel Washington is nominated for his outstanding performance in Fences for a SAG Award. It's an exciting time. We'll see if the Oscars remain white after all of these award nominations that have come out. But it was similar last year, right? Last year we saw Black people nominated at the Golden Globes and not nominated for the Oscars. NAACP Image Awards, of course, everybody's in there. Ava has been nominated both for 13th and for Queen Sugar, which I'm sure makes you happy.
I want her to get all the awards. As a matter of fact, you know what? Queen Sugar is so powerful. I am taking a hiatus. I can't too sensitive. I told you.
Oh, goodness.
I told you I'm too sensitive. I'm like three episodes in and way too invested in these characters for them to live. Like, I just want them to kind of put in a box and nothing ever happens to them and they all live happily ever after. I'm going to need a fairy tale ending and I know it's not going to give it to me. So,
So what I do want to ask you, did you have an opportunity to read that article about how we did Nate wrong? And he wasn't saying we actually did Nate wrong. He was saying we didn't need to bother tanking Birth of a Nation because Casey Affleck, who is now involved in a sexual, is it sexual misconduct or sexual? It's not sexual assault. I don't think I've read the word sexual assault. I think it's sexual harassment.
Yeah. So I think that it falls under the purview of sexual harassment, but gross sexual harassment, right? So egregious for two of his employees. Mm-hmm. In the same production.
Right. And it has not affected his nominations thus far, obviously. And basically, this is how it works. Black people are always the conscience. There's often consequence from our conscience. And Black people are the ones who suffer from it, whereas white people are just like, but he's a good actor. So Casey Affleck, Roman Polanski, Woody Allen, none of these people have faced any type of consequence from sexual misconduct allegations, whereas Birth of a Nation, in his opinion, has suffered due to the rape case from Nate's past.
Birth of a Nation was supported openly by Black women. Let's just be real.
Right.
So while there might have been certain Black women that were very vocal in opposition to saying, okay, well, I'm not going to that movie because of these, because of his past rape, a lot of Black women came out and supported that film economically at the box office. And it didn't do too shabby at the box office. You know, people really overblew whatever failure they thought that they were seeing there. It wasn't supposed to be, you know, the next, you know, Avengers movie.
Right. It was bought for $17 million. It was not bought for, you know.
Mm-hmm. So in that sense, I feel like people make too much of whatever they want to call a box office flop.
Mm-hmm.
$17 million was a good investment on Birth of a Nation. They going to recoup that money and mm-hmm. they going to make money after that. So let's just be real.
Right.
Like ain't nobody buying ramen because they bet on Birth of a Nation. It's going to be all right. It's going to be really all right. It's still paying a lot of mortgages.
Yes.
Now, as for Casey Affleck versus Nate Parker, so many different variables. And yes, race is always an issue, but you have a situation where not only did Nate have an acquittal in a case where it seemed very clearly a rape,
mm-hmm.
so much so that his accomplice
was convicted.
Conviction.
Right.
He had the initial conviction and then got acquitted just because the witness just wouldn't go through it. She won't put herself through it again.
Right.
Now, given that's the case, this is a very different situation. And then Nate, the only way Nate could have came out of that alive on a PR level is if he got out in front of that and was like, yo, I was wrong. I'm trying to make amends. I'm a different person now. All this stuff. But because of, you know, hubris, yes. I don't know what else it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, I almost was saying to you, I was like, yo, isn't he an actor? Mm-hmm. Like, if he can't get some humility happening, if he can't get some contrition happening, can't he just act like it? Because he's fucking shit up so bad right now for himself. Like, he just needs to act like it. He was snapping at reporters. He was ending interviews. He bungled his responses. He made apology, non-apologies. These are not the way that you would deal with this in a successful manner in 2016. You know what Casey Affleck has done? Shut the fuck up. It would have actually been better for Nate if he had done that.
Mm-hmm. No, he felt like he had to defend himself, and he did it in this very defensive way rather than calling mm-hmm. an Olivia Pope to get ahead of mm-hmm. it, as you say. I think what I'd like to mention here is something that I've mentioned before. I've listened to several different renowned, if you will, movie critics talk about Birth of a Nation, and they all felt like, and these were all white people, none of them really followed the controversy. They even kind of blew it off dismissively when discussing the film. They all said they were a bit disappointed. They felt like maybe the film was a bit overrated coming out of Sundance. Maybe mm-hmm. the hype was more, you know, just because of this record of being the highest bid ever placed at Sundance. But they felt like, it was a mediocre yeah. film. It wasn't a bad film, but it wasn't like a great Oscar-worthy film.
But we know that mediocre films have massive box office success all the time. So that doesn't necessarily explain its performance at the box office.
No, they were talking specifically about nominations, that they don't expect to see. You know, they said it's a good film. People should go see it. They even said that. But they don't expect to see any great nominations happening because...
But let's talk about Twice as Good a little bit. You know, my son was just reading a world's records book.
Mm-hmm.
And we had just seen Into the Woods, which is a white movie that's a take on like a combination of a lot of fairy tales. And right. it's a musical. And it sucks, right? Like it's
a musical from the 80s. And most people right. who had seen the musical said that this reproduction of it was not good. Yeah. I fell right. asleep watching it on the plane.
Exactly. So So it is the definition of mediocre, even with all of these amazing names in it. You got Meryl Streep and whatever.
Yeah.
So he was reading this and he was like, oh, this is a still from the movie. And I'm like, what is it? And it was because for that movie, Meryl Streep made herself the most nominated mm-hmm. Oscar nominee in the Academy for this mediocre piece of shit. Like, she's just.
But you know what? She's been nominated so much over the last 10 years. I feel like I don't even know what's happening when it comes to Meryl Streep. She gets right. nominated for any role these days.
Right.
Doesn't matter right. what she does. She even got nominated for Devil Wears Prada. Like,
Wow. Yes. She shows up on screen and then people just wet themselves. So all I'm saying is that, you know, Casey comes out mediocre out the gate, you know, but if he's like walking on two legs and talking through his mouth, like people are like, what's the yes. rage?
But when Casey talks, though, like, he does have a voice.
Stop it.
He is not.
I'm not saying that.
Casey?
I'm not saying that for Casey.
I'd be like, Casey, just whisper in my ear a little bit.
You can have that all by yourself. That's not something I want to partake in at all. Like,
I didn't say I wanted to have anything to do with him. I just said I like that voice.
Right. So for Nate would have to come out with the next Malcolm X, right? Yeah, like, it's just, that's just the reality of it. We still are dealing in a twice as good sort of scenario. Your Obama is like an universe as your Trumps, right? Like, you're like when we get something, you know, you're dealing with the best of all, right? As opposed to just the best of a group. And so Casey could just be like the best in his crew, or like the second or third best in his crew. But like, if his crew like him, he gonna get the accolades. Nate has to be like better than Casey to get, you know, a little bit as what Casey has. So that's just the reality.
And he has to be likable. Like, Sean Penn isn't likable by most people and by most standards. But, you know, he's still getting his nominations. He won his award.
I don't know an unlikable, successful Black male in Hollywood outside. And even the ones that are, you know, slightly...
Well, it's unlikable by whom, right? Like, Lee Daniels isn't likable, but white people like him.
Right. You have to be, you have to be palatable to white people. Right, you have to be conducive to white comfort. So that's all.
Moving on, I would like to talk about the article heard around the world.
Stop it.
Yes. The reason I want to talk about it is because this week there was this...
Say what it is.
Okay. I'm gonna get to it in a second. I want to talk about a Teen Vogue article, and I will say the title in just a moment. The reason I want to talk about it is because there was something else that happened this week that got all this attention, and I was just like, how short is the memory span of the average person? Not just the average American. I saw people posting about Madonna's speech. Madonna held a speech where she basically said... Now, I will grant, Madonna is the highest grossing female touring artist of all time, right? She wrapped up a tour in March that took in $170 million. Like, Rihanna has some high numbers. Rihanna's not at this number. Anyway, Madonna at the Billboard gave a speech as she was honored as Woman of the Year. And in that speech, she, you know, talked about her rape when she first moved to New York. And she just, for the first time, talked about that rape in 2013. She also talked about sexism in the industry, the constant bullying and relentless abuse, and so on and so forth, for over 30 years of her career. And everyone said, take note, this is such a powerful speech. Now, I'm going to contrast that with the Teen Vogue article titled, Donald Trump is Gaslighting America. It's dope because... Donald Trump, okay, first, maybe for some people who might not know what gaslighting is, gaslighting, as I'm going to quote it directly from the article, gaslighting is a buzzy name for a terrifying strategy currently being used to weaken and blind the American electorate. We are collectively being treated like Bella Manningham in the 1938 Victorian thriller from which the term gaslight takes its name. In the play, Jack terrorizes his wife, Bella, into questioning her reality by blaming her for mischievously misplacing household items, which he systematically hides. Doubting whether her perspective can be trusted, Bella clings to a single shred of evidence, the dimming of the gas lights that accompanies the late night execution of Jack's trickery. The wavering flame is the one thing that holds her conviction in place as she wriggles free of her captor's control. End quote. So to gaslight is to psychologically manipulate a person so much so that they question if their reality is still real. And I feel like Madonna was gaslighting in this speech.
Mm. Come with it.
Someone who is as racist as Madonna is openly racist.
Mm.
Someone who has not done anything to bring up other women in the industry. Someone who has her own role in sexism. Someone who has her own role in misogyny. Someone who... has not supported anyone other than themselves. How is this person going to talk about bullying, sexism, misogyny? She left out racism, of course, because she's a white woman. Why should I care about what Madonna says? Why should I care about anything Madonna does when she calls her son the N-word and then has no apologies?
Mm-hmm.
When she compares her album to Nelson Mandela and Martin Luther King Jr. because she called it, what was it?
Rebel.
Please, explain this to me.
Oh, we can go on with that. I mean, that was like when she said that Black men are culturally predisposed towards abuse and said nothing about the one abusive husband that she had, Sean Penn, who is a white man, the one who kidnapped her, terrorized her, and tortured her and raped her, right? Did any Black men do that? No, because they would have been under the jail, you know, if she knew of the Black man that did that, you know what I mean? So, but yeah, Black men are the one that have the cultural problem with abuse. It's endemic to us, so to speak. So, Madonna has major issues with race. She is racist as far as I could tell. But white feminism to me is just an extension of saying, okay, if one white woman can get some shine somehow, we good. Because this one white woman made it.
But it's just so shocking to me. And I know, maybe I'm just naive in this. It's so shocking to me that really black and white, black women, white men. I didn't see any black men posting about it. But so many of these people were saying, watch this speech. I listened to the speech. Honestly, it wasn't her best. And it sounded really scripted. It was really boring.
Oh my gosh, like you see in that speech why her acting career never took off. Like she
exactly.
had no presence.
Exactly.
I was like, she must have memorized it or something. It was so robotic.
It was hardly memorized.
Any emotion.
No.
Like I was bored. I was like, I don't know what's happening with Madonna nowadays in terms of just her rigidity in general, like in her physical body as
right.
well as the way that she comes across. But I mean, I don't know. I think that when we deal with trauma as women, which is what she was explaining there, trauma of being raped, of being assaulted, of being robbed several times and whatever. And then she went on to make her massive success off of her non-existent talent, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Like she might have talent. She must have talent as a businesswoman, and she must have a great
sure.
legal team
yes.
to like craft some wonderful contracts. So she had staying power. But have you heard Madonna? Like, it's all production, you know, and she hasn't even.
She's a studio singer. Her live stuff is nonsense.
Oh, my gosh. She's a performer to that extent. Right. Like, so in that sense, you know, this is exactly this is one of a huge example of what I was saying about the twice as good and how, you know, one of the white privileges that you have is to shine with mediocrity.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that. So Madonna is out there with her mediocre talent, you know, making a killing,
mm-hmm.
but somehow still, you know, is talking about like the oppression she faced when, you know, she was just, you know, struggling singer that came to New York to make it big.
Right. I'll leave it there. So what I would like to mention here is what is so amazing about Teen Vogue. So the editor-in-chief of Vogue magazine was caught saying some things about Donald Trump.
Mm.
And after she was caught saying that, and she didn't even say anything like that deep. She really just said that he's achieved nothing. His foundation has achieved nothing. And his presidency would probably just be to further his personal brand, right? That's all she said. I don't even think that's that scathing.
And Team facts.
Team facts. And she, I don't know if she felt forced to, but she did offer an apology saying that she regretted her comments and she hopes that he'll be a successful president for us all. Okay. However, Teen Vogue, which has brought us Solange interviewing the little one, the cute one from Hunger Games. What's her name? Amanda Stenberg.
Amanda.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, Teen Vogue has brought us some really successful things this year. And a part of that is definitely because of the editor-in-chief, Elaine Welteroth, who was named editor-in-chief in May. This is a Black 29-year-old woman who has worked in some large companies. She first was, I know she was at Glamour. She was at U.S. Cosmopolitan. Now she's editor-in-chief of Teen Vogue, which is a part of Condé Nast. And since she has taken over, and a 25-year-old is named Phil Picardi, who's the digital editorial director, the magazine is just doing the most. Now, we've talked about magazines like Elle and whatnot. And I will say, you know, I don't read the glossies. They don't speak to me. But let's just hear the top five list of the things most read this year from Teen Vogue. Number one, Donald Trump is gaslighting America. Number two, how to apply glitter nail polish the right way.
That's important.
Number three, Netflix arrivals October 2016. See the full list. Number four, Mike Pence's record on reproductive and LGBTQ rights is seriously concerning. And number five, dark marks and acne scars, your complete guide.
These are all things that are essential to life. Like, gosh, they're killing it with it.
They are. But that's what's so great about the list. It shows, as a woman, you can care about your appearance, and you can also hear about your reproductive rights.
They're slipping it in there. They're very sneaky. They're very sneaky, these feminists, so to speak. Oh, gosh. It's so funny how we live in a time where feminists get called Nazis, but Nazis don't get called Nazis.
No, they get called these chic guys with fashy haircuts.
Alt-righty.
So I just wanted to take a moment to say, I don't give a fuck what Madonna's talking about. when she's accepting her speech as Woman of the Year because she hasn't done anything for me. But Teen Vogue is doing it right now.
Let me tell you where I think a lot of the shine of Madonna and this speech comes from, is that when a survivor talks about their experience, there's somewhat of a ritual that happens where people say, well, aren't you so brave for talking about that? And it's not seen as the time in order to support survivors to talk about the ways in which that same survivor is culpable in abuse, right? Because we're trying to encourage survivors to be open about their experience and to talk about it and to feel like they would be believed and be heard. And I just want to kind of put a side note in there. It's not about not believing Madonna around her trauma and around her situation of surviving rape and assault and all of that. That's not the issue. The issue is that when someone comes up and starts touting themselves and touting their experience as a feminist experience, when at the same time they are complicit and active in racism, then that cannot be a feminist experience. It could be a white feminist experience, trademark 1907. I don't know. Like, when did that get the trademark? I think the suffrage movement trademarked white feminism when they kicked out Native and Black women so they could get the right to vote before Black men. I don't know. I think it was when that happened that white feminism got trademarked. But when that happened, it's not feminism in any real sense. It's not about the rights of women. It's about the rights of white women. It's about the rights of women, right women, to have the same exploitive power as white men. That's what she wants.
In our second segment, since this is our last podcast of the year,
'tis the season,
let's talk about 2016, year in review. 2016 has been a very difficult year. If we just look at, like, the people we've lost so many people. Side note, Madonna named some of those people who we lost this year, and then she had the nerve to say, and I'm still standing. That's, like, not how you say, and I'm still standing. Like, we don't really have a say over when the time has come. Please don't put yourself above David Bowie or Prince, Madonna. Thank you. Besides David Bowie and Prince, we lost Peter Vaughn. Most recently, we lost Alan Thicke from Growing Pains. Why didn't I know that that was Robert Thicke's daddy? Like, how did I miss the connection?
Yes, B.
Robert Thicke, your daddy is Alan Thicke? I grew up watching Alan Thicke on Growing Pains. Florence Henderson passed away this year. Leonard Cohen, Pete Burns, Gene Alexander, Alexis Arquette, Gene Wilder. Oh, Gene. We lost a lot of greats. I won't go through the whole list. But I will. Oh, I do have to mention the greatest of all time, though. Muhammad Ali. May all of them rest in peace. So 2016 has been an exceptionally hard year of loss when it comes to the greats that we grew up with, who were on the screen, who were in different areas of our life affecting us, activists. What else did 2016 bring us?
Hell on earth is what it brought us. Let's not mince words here. Let's not mince the initiation of the apocalypse. Let's be real.
The funny thing is about saying that, depending on who you ask, they will name the apocalypse for different reasons. So Peyton Manning, who I grew up with watching him in college football, he retired from the NFL this year. He was a quarterback at the Denver Broncos. Kobe Bryant retired from the LA Lakers, where he spent how long? I don't know. Forever? 20 years playing in the NBA? So if you ask sports fans, why was it hell on earth? Those are the types of things they might name. Others of us might talk about the political situation. And there are things beyond President-elect Cheetah that happened this year that were especially difficult to deal with. For example, in your previous state, North Carolina, Pat McCrory passed a bill saying that trans people could not use the bathroom that of the gender that they identified with. Rather, it had to be their assigned sex at birth.
North Carolina is a saga of unfortunate events, right? Because then they lost and they wouldn't accept that they lost the governorship. And now they're in special sessions as we speak, probably to try and curtail the power of the position of governorship, because a Democrat won over Pat McCrory. So it's such a shit show down there. I feel so sad for my people down in North Carolina, because you can't win for losing. And even and the police shootings down there are absolutely out of control as well. So it's also a state where they tend to not have a lot of transparency and accountability for the police. So it's, yeah.
Absolutely.
Politics, Republicans in general and conservatives have proven that they are completely overrun by people that are not going to politic anymore. Like, the stuff that we're seeing is gangster shit at this point, right? Like, we're not seeing politics, right? This, but it's not even civil anymore. It used to be that, you know, there was a process in the state house, or there was a process in Congress, and that process has broken down completely. What I would like to see on the left is for them to break down the process altogether too, and say, oh, we can monkey wrench? Let's do that. Because I think that the responsibility of civility is only on the left right now. And you can't fight with someone who's using an AK, and you out there with your baton or whatever talking about, but this is supposed to be a civil fight. Like, nah, B, we're bringing out the big guns. So that's the situation that we're dealing with right now politically. Well, not just in North Carolina, but all throughout the US.
Absolutely. And just to mention some of the international things that happened this year, El Chapo was arrested. North Korea announced it had successfully conducted a hydrogen bomb test.
Right.
We had the World Health Organization declare Zika a public health emergency of international concern. We saw attacks on the airport and subway stations in Brussels that killed more than 30 people and wounded about 270. ISIS claimed responsibility for that. We had the Panama Papers with more than 11 million documents, which dated back 4 decades, and reminded all of us why Putin is a billionaire. We had an earthquake in Ecuador that killed several hundred people.
We had Putin.
Something that was especially hard for me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was late. Yeah.
That was especially hard for me. The United Kingdom voted to leave the European Union. There were a myriad of car bombs and other suicide bombings in Pakistan and Iraq that get very little attention. We had Theresa May become Prime Minister of Great Britain. Nobody is happy about that. There is nobody who's happy about that, especially because she was, it's not like anyone voted for her. Then we had North Korea again claim that they detonated a nuclear warhead.
Like, North Korea got bars, yo. North Korea be fixing the fire on a regular basis.
One positive thing in burning of hell was that Boko Haram handed back 21 Chibok schoolgirls that they had kidnapped in April of 2014. However, they kidnapped 200 girls and women. So just to put in perspective how many 21 is. Yeah. So what 2016 has had to offer, it hasn't been great.
We didn't even get to, and then let's end the year with mass genocide in Syria. We didn't even get to that. Like, let's just raise an entire population. Let's just raise a city.
Well, you know, I saw a great deal of propaganda on that just the other day. A Black woman in the UK, who I actually respect, posted what I guess she didn't realize was propaganda that was saying that the videos were fake of the people because they've, you know, found these Twitter accounts and some of those people were journalists. So because they're journalists with an activist with a great following on Twitter, it must have been fake. And I was like, is this what it's come to? That people are buying into the Assad regime's propaganda, even in the West?
I think that's
they had like three examples, and that was enough for them to say it was fake.
Right. Well, people don't want it to be true, so it speaks to something in people. There, they'd be like, "Ah, oh, yeah, you know, it's wagging the was it the wag the dog kind of strategy." Yeah. Here's the thing: Denzel had a very notable quote recently about the media, where he says, if you don't read the news, you're uninformed. And if you read the news, you're misinformed. And he was talking about the propagation of fake news, where he said, it's more important now to people to just be first, be the first one to put it out. It doesn't matter if you're right. It doesn't matter who it affects. That's what it is. All right. I kind of dealt with that as a blogger many years ago. I happened to be the first reporting about an incident that happened, and it went viral, the article that I did. And I was, and when people came in my comments, people were like, as a journalist, and I was like, whoa, like since when? Since when am I a journalist? Like, I'm just like a chick with an opinion writing about stuff. But I don't really think that we're equipped to hear this much information from this many people. Like, our social groups have never been potentially as large as they currently are. Our points of information have never been as varied and as large as they are, which means that loudest voices don't necessarily have to be the rightest voice. The right voice is the rightest or the most grammatically correct even. So that being the case, we're in a very tough situation, and technology companies really have a responsibility in all of this to differentiate fact from fiction, fact from opinion, Nazis from hipsters.
that's a hard one, apparently. That's a hard one.
Nazis from fashion icons. From artisanal bear collectors. I don't know. Like, it's just, they don't know. They don't know. You put on a, what they call the hat? Put on a hat. What they call the hat? The hipster hat.
Fedora?
A fedora. You put on a fedora hat. And you'd be like, I think genocide's a good idea. And they're like, he's quirky.
So what do we want to leave in 2016? What are we going to leave behind us that we don't take it in 2017?
Oh, God. What are we going to leave behind us? Mm-hmm. Like the whole damn year? Like, I want to exfoliate this year off of my like karma. Like, I don't know. I want to put 2016 in a bowl of acid. I want it to dissolve. Wow. I just, that's how I feel about it.
All right.
Like all the artist death, Prince, you know, like I feel like I'm done. 2016, you got me.
In our final segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to? I know what you're looking forward to. You're looking forward to the sun. Let's move on. Next. Stop doing your dance. We all heard, we know. What are you actually looking forward to that the rest of us can rejoice in with you?
What am I looking forward to? This is 2017. I'm looking forward to, I have hired help on my project now so that even with my full-time job, I can get this project into the public eye. This is huge, right? Because the project was just too time consuming for me to do by myself. And I had to just be honest about that and hire some help. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
What project is this?
Black Austria, the interviews with Black people that live in Austria. So it's a documentary project. And the idea is to give people a toolkit so that they can conduct interviews themselves and then submit them to the site. So it could be a growing living archive.
Beautiful. And when can we look forward to its launch?
Well, my projected now is end of January because I'm essentially traveling until the middle of January. So I have to be at home for at least a week for this to happen.
Exciting.
I am very excited myself, yes.
Well, I'm looking forward to some things that we're going to be doing with the Queer Truth that we'll announce in the new year. I don't want to speak too soon, but there's going to be some changes with the Queer Truth that we're excited about. We're going to be offering a bit more to our very, very loyal readers and listeners. And I'm looking forward to leaving 2016 behind with all of its negativity. And I'm still hoping for a Hail Mary in the States. That might not happen, but I'm hoping for a Hail Mary on December 19th. Let December 19th be a day of reckoning. And other than that, I really just hope, as we say in German, that everyone slides into the new year healthy, happy, ready to take on the world with all of the positive energy and vibrations of the universe. Well, that's all for this week. If you'd like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And you can donate to us by going to our Patreon site, patreon.com/thequeertruth, to help us keep afloat in 2017. Until next year, peace out.